Against a black background, a shimmering louvered image of a castle forms. The space beneath the castle flares magically to reveal the words Walt Disney Pictures as a shooting star creates an arch. A row of leather-bound books lines a shelf. A hand pulls a book from the shelf. Embossed lettering on the cover reads, Swiss Family Robinson, by Johann David Wyss. The view pulls back to reveal a young woman holding the book. She gazes at it fondly. Smiling, she hands the book to a figure in a wingback chair. Wearing a skirt and blouse with a lace-colored sweater and sporting a bow in her hair, she sits on the floor facing the figure and leans on her elbow. The figure opens the book to a page displaying a map of Europe.
When Europe went to war to stop the most ambitious man on earth, who in 1813 was Napoleon Bonaparte, London was a little world that needed house cleaning and airing out. A well-mannered, profligate world of ballrooms and gaming tables. Almost nobody cared for tomorrow. But tomorrow is many things in a man's life. Tomorrow is old age, which can be nothing better than regrets. And tomorrow is a man's family. There were those in 1813 who hoped for a cleaner, a better world than theirs to raise their children. Such a man was William Robinson, a Swiss, maker of fine clocks and watches.
In an elegant office, a fire flickers in a hearth. Clocks of various shapes and sizes line shelves behind a dark-haired man at a desk. The man peruses a form titled Colonial Office London, Application for Permit to Leave England. He hovers his quill over the text, which reads, Reasons for Leaving, to settle as colonists in Australia. Name, William Robinson. Nationality, Swiss. Age, 43. Wife, the Lady Elizabeth, daughter of the Earl of Combe. Age, 36. Children, Fritz, Jack, Ernest, and Francis. Lifting his gaze from the paper, the man eyes a box lying on his desk. With a small smile, he moves it closer and gazes at a picture of a blonde woman on the lid. He opens the box. In a stately parlor, the blonde woman plays a spinet.
The first he was a gay millard. The next was a spinner of yarn.
She eyes a toddler sitting on the floor, flanked by two large dogs. He beams up at her.
With a broadcloth under his arm. With a broadcloth under his.
Meanwhile, an elderly man opens a door for an adolescent in a top hat and cane.
Good afternoon, Master Jack.
Afternoon, Thorin.
Thorin removes the newcomer's cape.
Socrates and Fisticuffs arrived yet?
Not yet, sir.
Jack pokes the older man with his cane.
Thorin? You're a disgrace.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, sir. Your stock is not starched. I noticed the prince's man yesterday. See to it, my good fellow.
Very good, sir.
The boy enters the parlor.
Taylor went forth, and he stole broadcloth for to keep those three scamps warm.
Approaching the woman from behind, he stops and studies the toddler through his lorgnette.
Taylor went forth, and he stole broadcloth for to keep those three scamps warm.
Jack steps forward and kisses the woman's neck.
The miller.
Jack, darling.
Rising, she kisses his cheek.
Upon my soul, Mother, you're lovelier than ever.
Flatterer. What a perfect coat.
This? Just a rag my tailor threw together. Invitations for your New Year's party, Mother?
he picks up two addressed envelopes from a stack on a writing desk.
Lady Carter. Abhor the woman. Such a pious bore.
Oh, Jack, darling. I do hope you will be here.
Too stuffy for me, my sweet. Anyhow, the little Lady Angela has first claim on me now.
So serious. At your age?
There's 5 million in the family stocking, my duck. The old Duke can't last long. Thank heaven. I shall lie about my age and marry the little doll.
Jack.
I mean it, Mother. And if Father doesn't interfere, I shall do it quicker than you can see. Jack Robinson. Odds, boots and beavers, Mother. Think what I could do with 5 million.
You'll make a far handsomer beau than Mr. Brummel.
At the door.
Hello, Thorpe.
Hello, Master Ernest. It's nice to see you home.
Thorin, you can't guess what I'm giving you for Christmas.
Might be a book.
Oh, yes. The Dialogues of Plato. A very nice edition, too. And I do hope you will increase the pages as you did in my Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, no, I won't do that, Ernest.
The boy enters the parlor.
Hello, Mother. Ernest.
The two hug.
I took the coachman to drive like anything. And Mother, the head says I'm certain for an Oxford scholarship someday. Oh, hello, Beau.
Hello, Socrates.
Where's old Fisticuffs?
Our soldier must be dallying. A petticoat, no doubt.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, it's all right, Mother. We've heard of petticoats at school.
Yes, I believe Socrates even mentions them in his diary.
Ernest shushes his brother, then turns to the toddler.
Oh, hello, Francis. I didn't see you there. Hello, Turk. Hello, Rover. Oh, boy, how are you?
Good afternoon, sir.
At the door.
Good afternoon, Thor.
William Robinson enters.
You have decided, sir?
Decided? I've done it. Fancy, I've actually done it, Thor.
I could read it in your face, sir.
It will not be a popular decision.
I'm afraid not. Since Master Jack intends to marry Lady Angela, and Master Fritz can't wait to become a soldier and begin shooting at somebody.
Well, those two noble ambitions prove how right I am. I've arranged a comfortable pension for you, Thorin.
Thank you, sir. I shall be able to end my days back in Switzerland, then.
Everyone home?
All but Master Fritz, sir.
Tell me when he arrives.
Now, an ornate clock shows 5:15. Thorin lets in a young man in a soldier's uniform.
Welcome home, Master
Fritz. How do you do, Thorin? The coachman has my portmanteau.
Very good.
Well, jump to it, my man, or I shall take my boot to you.
Yes, sir.
Thorin helps Fritz out of his coat, and the young man hands him his sword sheathed in a scabbard.
Oh, you military men.
Fritz enters the parlor.
Hello, Mother.
Fritz, darling.
You're late.
Colonel called me in. He was very complimentary.
Yes, I can hear him.
Jack grips the arms of his chair.
My dear Mr. Robinson, with your natural instincts as a killer, I prophesy a brilliant career for you in your chosen profession.
You know, if we were still living in Switzerland, I should run away and join Napoleon.
Fritz, you would join Napoleon and not Lord Wellington?
Napoleon is the greatest genius of our age.
What luck for Wellington that we're living in England now.
Jack.
Rarely heard a more elevating conversation.
Good afternoon, sir.
Welcome home, boys.
Thank you, sir.
Elizabeth, my darling.
He kisses the woman's cheek.
Good afternoon, William. Ernest, I want those invitations in the post tonight.
That will not be necessary. I'm sorry to disappoint you, my dear, but there'll be no New Year's party. And your plans for the holidays must be given up.
Oh, but William, why?
Just a moment, dear. You lads have £5 a month for pocket money. And I've no doubt your mother gives you another £5.
A mere bagatelle to a gentleman of fashion, sir.
I had a shilling a month when I was your age. And I had to work for that.
But there's no need for our sons to earn their living.
Could they, if they had to, I wonder?
What a fatiguing suggestion.
These are modern times, Father.
And none the better for that. I've been thinking a great deal the last few months about this world we live in. We call it civilized. And yet men are using their energy to destroy one another.
William paces between his sons.
A little man with an insane ambition has set out to conquer Europe. It doesn't matter to him that 1 million young men will be killed and maimed because of him. And that man is a hero to one of my sons.
You can't deny that Napoleon is a great man, sir.
But I do deny it. Napoleon is a great militarist. He was a great man.
William points to a painting of Jesus and his disciples.
But, William, what has all this to do with my party?
She grabs a piece of fabric.
Here's the brocade for my New Year's gown. Isn't it lovely?
Yes. And you would have looked lovely in it. Bear with me, darling. I'm trying to explain myself. Because of your schooling, I've seen very little of you lads since we've lived in England. And what I have seen, I don't particularly admire.
Every family sends one son into the army, and of course, Fritz would never really join Napoleon. Jack will marry the Lady Angela and become a great figure in society. And Ernest, he will become a famous scholar.
One son whose profession is to kill. He doesn't care on which side so long as he can kill. Another who idolizes fops and wastrels and would be content to live in idleness on a woman's money. And another who is rather a priggish little bookworm.
On the floor, Francis hugs a dog.
And one who thinks profoundly, I'm sure. But he refuses to speak and tell us what he thinks.
William, that's not just. They're splendid boys.
I venture to disagree. I love my sons, deeply. But I don't approve the standard by which they live.
Why, sir?
Because I believe a man should create, not destroy. He should build. If it's only a roof to give him shelter. A garden to give him food and a loom to make his clothing. Well, on this earth there are places where we can live such a life. In peace and honor God. And where my sons can learn to be men.
William, what are you saying?
That we're leaving for a new land.
What's to become of Lady Angela?
My future, sir.
I sent in your resignation.
My resignation? Mother.
William, I beg you to take time to reconsider.
I've struggled and prayed for months, as you know. But now my mind's made up. I've sold my factory and this house. We sail for the colonies on Monday.
You dare to decide our lives for us like this?
I'm doing it to save our family, my dear, not to destroy it. I do hope you'll understand that one day.
He takes Elizabeth's hand. Now, seated at the writing desk, Ernest wipes his teary eyes, then lowers a feather quill to a diary. As he writes, views fade in over him, showing hands assembling silverware in a case, taking the painting off the wall, and packing linens. Two movers carry the spinet out of the parlor. Ernest's writing reads, "It is very sad to have a home broken up. Mother cried, and I did too, but I suppose Father knows best." Now, on a calm sea, a tall ship sails beneath a sky dotted with puffy clouds. On board, a man in uniform writes in a logbook. The text reads, "Sailed 6 a.m. on outgoing tide, bound for Australia, carrying cargo and domestic animals for colonists. Only passengers are William Robinson and family." The book flips several pages, stopping at one that reads, "40th day," followed by coordinates, course, and distance. The captain adds to the information, starting with the word, "wind." Now, the ship sails on choppier waters. Standing on the deck with Fritz, Jack retrieves a snuff box from his coat pocket.
I think the one might be sipping tea with Lady Angela.
Or drinking champagne with one's regiment.
It isn't easy to forgive Father.
A sailor spills liquid at their feet. Jack jumps.
My snuff box! You clumsy lout, I ought to have the captain flog you.
At least the flogging would break the monotony.
It's exactly like the one Beau Brummel carries. I had him made especially.
Nearby, William approaches Elizabeth.
Anything I can do for your comfort, my dear?
It's awful boredom. Week after week. We had to be obedient and come, William, but it's hard to forgive you.
William eyes his elder sons.
So I've been given to understand by all of you.
Elizabeth averts her gaze. Now, a moving black line on a map shows the ship's course, traveling around the continent of South America and heading west toward Australia and its surrounding islands. The ship sways in a strong wind. As a sailor steers the vessel, the captain regards the overcast sky. The ribbon on a sailor's hat blows in the wind as he glances up, as Elizabeth and her two younger sons rest on deck, with William standing nearby. The dogs look alertly toward the sky. The ship rocks. Below deck, farm animals grow restless inside their pens. As dark clouds drift in overhead, the captain's eyes dart worriedly. A weather barometer's arrow points to stormy as a shadow creeps over it. More sailors notice the worsening weather. With another uniformed officer at his side, the captain looks through a telescope. A view through the device shows large waves rising from the sea. The captain glances skyward again, then cups his mouth with one hand.
Bosun, pipe all hands on deck to take in sail!
Aye, aye, sir!
A sailor on a lower deck lifts a whistle to his mouth. William, Elizabeth, and their three oldest sons wear worried expressions.
Mr. Robinson, get your family below decks at once and make everything fast in your cabin. Bosun!
Below deck.
Why did they have to come?
Here, listen, please.
Oh, Father, I'm afraid it's all right. Get
off, there are four of you, and furl at the gallant souls.
Off there, you swine!
On deck, a sailor pauses on the lower rungs of the rigging. Another swipes at his feet. Fritz rushes into the family's cabin.
Away to as big as mountains, sir.
Look!
Ernest and Fritz stare out a window.
Look, that wave! It's bigger than the ship! It'll dash us all to pieces, sir!
Find this pod!
William regards the wild, turbulent sea and the crashing waves outside, then moves away from the window with a furrowed brow.
Courage, my dears. Courage!
Above, the wind makes rags of the sails. Struggling with a rope, a sailor rings a bell. Two others come to his aid. A massive wave crashes over the men, and the ship rocks as another giant wave rolls under it. Below deck, the family struggles to stay upright. One of the ship's masts hangs lopsided as wind tears through the sails. In the cabin, William and his wife cradle Francis. They glance upward. On the now vacant deck, the bell continues ringing. Over a view of the steering wheel spinning aimlessly, words appear. Captain and crew washed overboard. The flying swan, a battered hulk, a merciless sea, its master. Now, the maimed ship, with nearly all its sails gone, sits lodged against a rocky outcropping in the sea. In the cabin, Ernest blinks and rubs his eye as light streams through the window, the bars throwing strips of shadows across his face and body. Moving to the window, he opens it to a view of an island in the distance. His eyes widen and his jaw drops.
An island? Look! Look, Father! Look, everybody! An island! An island!
Oh. By God, it is an island!
Let's go on
there! Come on, Dad!
Beaming, Ernest and his older brothers run off, leaving their parents at the window.
Our prayer's been answered, my dear.
Topside, the three sons eye the tattered deck as they approach the side of the ship facing the island. They gather near a spot with a section of the railing missing.
Oh, I wonder how far away it is. Boy, if we could have just been wrecked on the island instead of on this awful reef.
William arrives on the deck.
I hope she stays on the rocks.
I could swim a little way.
Marvelous. What would you do after that? Walk?
I see what you mean. And Mother and the baby, they can't swim at all.
What about me? After seven strokes, I'm shark bait.
We used to paddle in the river in half barrels when we were children.
William moves closer.
Ernest may have an idea there, sir. There are plenty of them down in the hold.
Fancy Mother paddling in a barrel.
You might be able to make a raft out of them.
A raft? Oh, what fun!
Hardly fun in that sea, but a raft is our only chance. Fritz, get the guns and powder out of the ship's magazine. We may have to deal with savages.
All right, sir.
Ernest, help your mother get food. Jack, come with me.
Now, William and Jack descend into a flooded storeroom filled with barrels, bags, and trunks. Fritz pushes an upturned table out of his way as he approaches a cupboard in the ship's magazine. In the storeroom, Jack throws away a barrel's lid.
Pity to waste all this.
I don't regret the salt pork. Such vulgar food.
He removes his hands from the barrel's rim as William dumps the meat. In the ship's magazine, Fritz gathers guns from the cupboard. Meanwhile, Jack covers his nose as he and William enter the animal area.
Poor brutes. They're headed for a watery grave.
Not if we can get them ashore.
Well, how can we?
The barrels that will serve for us might serve for them as well. Come on, lad. Let's see if we can untie them.
They step past ducks and geese swimming in the calf deep water and approach the cattle pens.
A cowherd. Have I come to this?
Jack pulls a handkerchief from his cuff and holds it to his nose as he pats a bull.
Now, steady, old girl. Steady. Pardon me, old boy.
He reaches for a knotted rope.
Oh, you're a good boy. Well, I'll save you now.
He feebly tugs on the rope, then dabs his hand with the handkerchief. On the deck, hand saw a barrel in half and tie pieces of the broken mast together. Francis watches his father and brothers at work. Fritz smiles as Jack hits his hand with a hammer. Later, William loads a raft floating beside the ship. Empty half barrels line the edges of the structure. Jack and Fritz look on from the deck.
Just my luck to have to sit in the pork tub.
Perhaps you prefer my herring barrel.
Here's another keg, sir. Watch out, Father, don't fall.
Just a moment, ma'am.
William makes his way to the edge of the raft, and Ernest tosses a keg to him from the section of the deck with the missing railing. A little later, Jack, Ernest, and Elizabeth heave a trunk to the edge of the deck.
Those things cannot go, my dear.
But our clothes.
And my books, sir.
It will hold little more than ourselves. Hurry!
You mean we can't take any of our things?
Look, my dear, I can risk only the barest necessities.
Oh, but William.
I know. It's my fault that we're here. But now that we are, we'll have to make the best of it.
Mother, look what I found. It was in the captain's cabin. It's gold for the colonists. It's ours now by right of salvage, isn't it, sir?
Yes, but we can't take it ashore. I don't dare risk the weight.
Not take it?
What can we leave in its place? Our food? Grain for the animals? The axe? The saw? Gunpowder? They may save our lives. Hurry!
Nearby, Ernest holds a bird.
You pretty thing. You can fly ashore. I wish we could.
He releases it.
This is life and death, my girl.
In you go, Lady Godiva.
Fritz and Jack toss a pig with two barrels strapped to it overboard. The creature floats in the water. Later, aboard the packed raft, the family paddles away from the ship, pulling the farm animals along behind them, most floating with the aid of barrels. The ducks and geese glide easily on the water, free of ropes and barrels. As the raft moves through the choppy water, William wipes his palm on his vest, then resumes paddling. Behind him, his three older sons also paddle tirelessly, while Elizabeth looks on with a worried expression. Water splashes up at Francis sitting in a barrel in front of his mother. He holds up his small hand against the spray. A larger splash drenches Francis as Elizabeth holds him in his barrel. Grimacing, he rubs his face. Elizabeth reaches forward and bails water out of his barrel. The family and the farm animals continue moving away from the ship. Ernest turns and looks at the vessel. The two dogs stand on the deck. Ernest beckons to them. The dogs lean cautiously over the water, then jump in and paddle toward the raft.
Swim hard, Rover.
Keeping their heads above water, the dogs move through the rough waves.
Swim!
They continue swimming closer. Ernest resumes his paddling duties with his father and brothers. The dogs and the farm animals, which include the pig, the bull, and a donkey, thrash against the waves as they bob up and down in the water. Ernest glances over his shoulder at Turk and Rover, who continue swimming behind the raft. The family draws nearer to the island. Waves crash against the coastline.
Our raft will never live through it, sir.
It must!
Ernest stops paddling as something off to his right catches his attention. He spots the swimming flock of birds changing course.
Father, the ducks and geese, they're going that way.
William watches the birds thoughtfully.
There must be a reason. Let's follow them.
Now, the flock swims in a calm bay. The raft approaches an inlet connecting the raging sea to the bay. Later, the flock leads the floating parade of stranded humans, farm animals, and two dogs down a serene river. A wild jungle with tropical plants and low-hanging vines surrounds them.
Untie the animals!
Yes, sir.
Ernest and Fritz untie ropes from the back of the raft, while William and Jack keep paddling. Ernest wears a look of wonder as he eyes his surroundings, in contrast to his mother's trepidatious expression. A few graceful birds with long necks fly low across the water. A pair of owls keeps watch from a branch. A long-legged bird wades through the water. As Elizabeth looks around with a furrowed brow, a tall bird on a sandy shore spreads its black-tipped wings. In the jungle, sunlight bathes a fawn. Two cockatoos perch side by side on a vine. William guides the raft to a riverbank, then flings a rope onto land and steps out. He secures the raft to a broken tree trunk before helping his family disembark. Cradling Francis, Jack steps ashore, then puts the toddler down. His mother and brothers follow. With the whole family on dry land, William kneels reverently. The others do the same, including Fritz, who clutches a gun. As William lifts his face toward the sky, water drips from his hair.
Dear Father, in the fullness of our hearts, we thank you for your great mercy. You who have delivered us through storms and tempests into this new land, we pray you, guide us now and give us courage to obey your will.
The animals climb onto the riverbank.
Amen.
Amen.
Later, a makeshift tent stands near the water beside a row of farm animals tied to posts. William secures a bull's rope, then pets the creatures.
Now, don't be frightened. You behave yourself. You too.
He moves to the tent and finds Fritz and Jack patting the ground inside. Ernest makes a pillow out of white flowers.
Make your mother's bed soft. Remember, she's very tired.
It's not all beer and skittles for us, sir.
Well, I'll reserve my sympathy for your mother.
He leaves the tent and joins his wife standing among their luggage outside.
Darling, you must be exhausted.
I've done very little.
I'm afraid that bed will hardly give you the rest you need.
She wrings her hands.
William, I don't expect to live in comfort here. We have no choice, I realize that.
She glances at her hands.
I'll do my part. I'll do whatever you ask.
Thank you, my dear. Obedience is a virtue. Though it sometimes lacks charm a little.
As he picks up a cask and moves off, she drops her arms to her sides and slumps her shoulders.
What are you having for supper, Mother?
I wonder what it'll be.
I don't know, darling. Our food is all spoiled. The biscuits are water-soaked and our meat is ruined.
Then the island will have to feed us.
Francis walks toward them, waving a crab. William kneels before the toddler.
When in doubt, ask the elder statesman. He's telling us our food is in the sea.
William takes the crab from him.
Come along, Francis. Show me where the little crabs are.
Ernest leads him away.
Fritz, I think those are date palms. Climb up and see.
Very well, sir.
Jack, get the hooks and lines and try for fish off the rocks.
Yes, sir.
You can dig worms for bait.
Worms, sir?
Worms.
Jack eyes his hands, then opens his mouth as if to speak.
Mm-hmm.
William nods, and Jack leaves, wearing an uneasy look. William grins. Later. The family joins Ernest in a clearing to find Francis sitting astride a large turtle.
Look what we found!
The elder statesman is riding on our soup.
At night, the family eats by firelight, using large shells as bowls and smaller ones as spoons.
Turtle soup, crab meat, fish and dates. Well, the king himself couldn't dine better.
Or be served on such elegant gold plates.
I never knew that you could cook, sir.
Neither did I.
That makes five of us who are surprised at the way this dinner's turned out.
For one moment, I thought we were dining in Berkeley Square.
When you have to wash these shells, Mother, you'll realize how brutally far this is from dear old London.
Wash them?
Jack will do the dishes.
Me? Wash dishes?
Why not?
Well, I...
Jack's shoulders slump.
First a cowherd, then a scullion. Where will it all end?
With your lily-white hands in the water, Lady Bird. Shall I stand guard over him, sir?
You'll help him.
Fritz shoots his mother a surprised look, then presses his lips together.
Father, the chickens. Shall I give them some of our grain?
No, lad. They must scratch for themselves as we shall. That grain is our seed for next year's harvest.
Next year? Oh, but surely we'll be rescued long before that.
By gad, I should hope so. Lady Angela wouldn't wait that long. Still, the little wench may be true to my memory.
We better face the facts, my dears. That storm has blown us far out of the trade routes. It's only by chance that a ship will come this way.
Oh, no!
Jack eyes his father with a furrowed brow.
We'll hope for rescue, and one day we may reach the colonies. But in the meantime, we must plan our lives as though that day may never come.
Oh, but a ship might pass in the dark and never see us. William, we must light a signal fire.
Yes, yes, a signal
fire. Yes,
let's light it now.
Let's light it immediately.
Ernest and his two older brothers rush off. William stares after them.
Why do you look like that? Don't you want us to be rescued?
I only want one thing of life. Your happiness, and that those boys may grow up into wisdom and strength.
My happiness. Here.
Her face hardens.
And what can the boys learn in this barbaric spot?
They can learn to be men. Instead of idling.
A smile touches his lips.
They've begun to learn already. They've shown courage in the last few days. Do you know, for the first time in my life, I'm proud of my sons.
William, I believe you deliberately keep us on this island.
Her husband glances at her, then lowers his head.
We've been saved by a miracle.
He looks skyward.
Perhaps it's his will that we're here.
Later, a large signal fire blazes atop a cliff on the coast. In the tent, Elizabeth lies with her head on the white flowers.
Pillow of wildflowers for your lovely head. You'll not miss your perfume bottle tonight.
Francis lies beside his mother, covered by a blanket.
Good night, dear.
William kisses his wife's forehead, then touches the toddler's cheek.
Close your eyes.
As Elizabeth stares at the top of the tent, William stands and moves toward the opening.
William.
Yes, dear.
You will keep the signal fire burning.
He nods.
Yes, I will.
He picks up a gun and leaves the tent, pulling a cloth over the opening. Outside, he takes in his surroundings as he approaches one of the dogs sitting by the campfire. He pets the dog on its head. Later, he sits resting on the ground before the campfire with his back to a tree and the dogs on either side. Behind him, above the moonlit sea, the signal fire burns brightly on the cliff. Daytime, puffy clouds hang over the churning waves of the sea. Elizabeth and her three younger sons stand on the coast.
Mother, if we all prayed for a ship, do you think one would come?
I doubt whether father's prayer would be very ardent.
William and Fritz arrive.
We've explored the beach for miles. There's not a sign of inhabitants.
Not even a footprint.
I think we can risk a trip to the brig.
Oh, no, William. It's too dangerous.
Well, the sea's calmer today.
Only near the shore, sir. But out by the brig. Look, it's still choppy.
Waves lap at the ship in the distance.
Well, we'll manage it.
Well, William, please.
All your comforts are there, my dear. You'll feel less strange here with your household things about you.
You'll bring the gold, Father?
If there's room, yes.
But it's a fortune.
Hardly here, lad. Gold's a symbol of riches only where things can be bought.
Yes, but William, think what it'll mean to the boys when a ship does come.
Very well, my dear. I'll bring it if I can. Fritz, you stay here and guard your mother. Jack and Ernest will come with me.
More blisters?
On the water, William, Jack, and Ernest paddle their raft toward the ship. Standing in front, William beams as the wind whips at his hair. Behind him, his sons grimace, straining to paddle against the strong current. Jack notices a large turtle swimming nearby. Clambering over his bow, he taps Ernest on the shoulder and points to it. Ernest grins. Grabbing a rope, Jack points to it and then to the turtle. Ernest nods. Unbeknownst to William, Jack makes a lasso, and Ernest tosses it over the creature's neck.
This'll give you brawn and sinew, lads. It isn't merely muscle driving us, but the proper application of it. There's the right way and the wrong way. Dip your paddles deep. When you take them out, dip them cleanly. Never drag them.
The turtle swims ahead of the raft, pulling it. The boys laugh.
See what I mean, lads? We're making much more headway now.
He notices his sons relaxing behind him. Frowning, he turns to face the front again and catches sight of the turtle towing the raft. He grins at the boys. Ernest looks toward Jack as he shares a laugh with his father and brother. Eyeing the water, William grows serious.
Look sharp, lads. We're getting into rough water. Untie the rope.
Yes, sir.
Ernest unties the turtle while William and Jack start paddling. A little later, they approach the ship, paddling through larger waves. Later still, with the raft tethered to the ship, William and Jack pull Ernest onto the deck. The trio shares a smile.
Well?
William looks from the ship to the raft below.
We'll have to unlarge the raft, lads, to carry our load.
He looks at Jack.
Hail them on shore so they know all's well.
Ole, ole!
Fritz answers from shore.
Ole, ole!
Now then, let's get to work.
Later, the raft floats with the top barrels removed, leaving an open rectangle of wood. Boards drop onto it. William and his sons hammer the boards, then create a railing along the edge of the raft. They lift a single sail with a short mast upright, securing the mast into a hole at the front of the raft. They load trunks, boxes, and furniture onto the raft. Later, they stand amid a full load on the raft, the items stacked higher than the railings. Wind and rain blow across their faces.
Now let's see if we got everything. Nails, pulleys, carpenter's tools, tobacco, mother's clothes, sugar, salt, sailor's sewing kit, ship's compass.
It sounds like it's breaking up, Father. We better cast off.
Not without your mother spinning.
Leaving Ernest on the raft, William and Jack climb up a plank to the ship's dock. The ship crashes against the rocks. On deck, William and Jack are on either side of the spinet. William spots Elizabeth's New Year's brocade hanging out of a basket nearby. Taking the delicate fabric in his hands, he examines the shimmering embroidery on it, then glances toward the island. Pulling the fabric out of the basket, he bunches it up and stuffs it under the lid of the spinet. He shuts the lid and gives it a tap.
All right, Jack.
A swell briefly lifts the ship before lowering it hard onto the rocks. On the ramp, William and Jack carry the long, thin spinet upside down.
Careful, Father!
Ernest helps them place it on top of the raft's precariously tall load.
Hurry, Father!
The gold!
It's too late, sir! Don't risk it!
I promised!
William climbs the plank again. As the ship bobs up and down, a view from inside its hull shows a large hole, taking in copious amounts of water. William inches down the plank, carrying a trunk. Jack helps him with the weight.
Easy. Easy, lad. Steady. Steady, lad.
William gets on the bobbing raft. He and Jack heave the trunk on top of the spinet.
Don't drop it. That will make your mother happy. Get ready. We're going to cast off now.
All right.
Near them, the ship bashes against the rocks. On the raft, William works with a rope. On the opposite side, the spinet teeters precariously. William gapes. As it tips toward the water, he lunges for it.
The spinet!
He falls overboard.
Father! Father! Jack! Jack! Quickly! Jack! Jack!
What's happened? What's happened? Where's Father?
Jack dives into the water and resurfaces with his unconscious father. Jack swims backward toward the raft. A little later on the raft, Ernest caresses his unconscious father's head while Jack taps his face.
We've got to cast off! The brig is going to break off any minute.
A large wave hits the ship. Now, a fog rolls in as the boys paddle away from the ship on large roiling waves. William stirs, touching his forehead. Ernest looks back at the ship. Jack steals a glance backward, then paddles frantically. Behind them, the ship capsizes, disappearing from view in seconds as it descends into the depths of the sea. On shore, a heavy fog masks the sea from view. Elizabeth turns to her eldest son.
I shouldn't have let them go.
The raft slowly makes its way through the fog, with Ernest and Jack paddling hard, while William remains resting against the luggage. Later, the raft enters the calm bay. Later still, William rests on the riverbank surrounded by his family.
I'm all right now, my dears. Now don't worry.
It was the spinet, Mother. He got hurt saving it.
Father.
Oh, now. Don't trouble, lads.
His eyes widen and dart around. He looks around at his doting family gazing adoringly at him and smiles.
Oh, I've never had quite so much attention in all my life.
At night, Francis watches Ernest steady a goose.
Now stay there, because I've just got to have a pen.
Ernest plucks a large feather.
This will make a fine pen, Francis.
He sharpens the hard end of the feather with a knife, then grabs a handful of berries.
These berries will make grand ink.
He crushes them, squeezing the juice into a shell. The goose stands and flaps its wings, making Ernest's hair flutter. Squeezing the last of the berry juice, Ernest puts the shell aside, then grabs the feather as well as a small barrel with his diary resting atop the lid. He dabs the tip of the feather into the berry juice, then writes in the diary, unaware of Francis pulling the shell toward himself. Francis lifts the shell to his mouth and takes a sip of the juice, then smacks his lips and eyes his brother, who continues writing. The toddler takes another swig, spilling juice down his front. In the diary, beneath a sketch of a stick figure looking through a telescope, Ernest's handwriting reads, "Tomorrow we are going to explore the rest of the island. What fun!" Now, sunshine bathes the jungle as Ernest, Fritz, and William walk around. They spot an ostrich nearby.
Olive, Lord!
Fritz aims a gun.
Wait! Don't shoot.
Why not?
Well, he's not doing us any harm. Besides, you can't eat him.
He looks clean enough to me, sir. I wonder if he likes coconuts.
Try it.
Ernest offers an open coconut.
Here, Henry. Come on, Henry. Nice, Henry.
Don't be afraid. He's not afraid of you.
Why, he's tame as a house cat.
Nice, Henry.
Smart little brat. He even knows the bird's name.
He looks like one of the boys at school, that's why.
Here, there's some more in here, Henry. Nice, Henry. Come on. You know I'm going to make you my very own pet. Come on. You know, I'm your monster now. Come on.
Later, William and Fritz return to the campsite, where Elizabeth hangs clothes on a line.
This is better than I hoped for, darling. We found a paradise. Really, it's a new world unspoiled by man.
Look, Mother, cane for sugar and pomegranates. They actually drip from the trees.
Rich soil, ripe for tilling. A spring brimming with clear, sweet water. And over beyond the lagoon, the ship, stern, and timber have floated in. We can make a home here.
Elizabeth glares.
Build a house?
William's smile fades.
No, darling. A home, not a house.
What's this knobby thing?
It's a calabash. Father says we can use them for bowls.
I see. We seem to be getting nearer and nearer the savage state.
I hope we won't come to nose rings and loincloths, Mother.
No chance for that. Fritz, take down the tent.
Very
Jack,
well, sir.
Gather the animals. Yes. Ernest!
Ernest!
Coming, Father, coming!
Holding the coconut, Ernest runs with Henry the ostrich following him. Later, the family and animals stand in the jungle, dwarfed by massive trees. Elizabeth sits astride the donkey with Francis.
Ah, isn't this inspiring, my dear?
She sulks.
Yes.
Oh, Father, wouldn't it be fun to build a house in a tree, like the one I had at home?
That's a grand idea, lad. Even better than your barrel boat. A tree house would be cooler in the summer and drier in the winter.
We'll live in a tree.
Oh, dear. It sounds as though we're going to stay here forever.
You're right, Mother. I may suggest so. With the same amount of lumber and work, we could build a boat to escape in.
Oh, William.
Please, look at them. They're just like giants. I
read about places like this, but...
I say, Jack.
But just fancy
being in one.
You
believe me when I told you about the size of these trees?
Oh, Mother, isn't this paradise, isn't it? Oh, Turk, Roma, what fun we'll have. Oh,
later.
This altar cloth, the symbol of peace and goodwill among men, shall be our flag.
William ties one edge of an ornate altar cloth to a rope going up and over the trunk of a tall, skinny tree. His family watches as he pulls on the other end of the rope, hoisting the makeshift flag into the air where it flutters in the wind. He ties the ends of the rope to the tree.
I claim this land for all those who wish to live in peace with their fellow men. May strife be unknown here, and may happiness reign always.
They look out at the rocky coastline stretching out before them. Now, William hollows out a large section of a massive tree trunk, creating a burrow. Nearby, Elizabeth stirs a pot as Ernest jumps.
Oh, dear, I do wish I hadn't been so frightened going into the kitchen at home.
Oh, don't worry, Mother. Cooking's just boiling water with things in it.
Yes, I know it is, but this water is supposed to taste like fish stew.
Shall I have the clams, Mother?
Clams, flying fish, and lobster, crabs, mussels, and oyster.
Cook used to be awfully particular about her seasoning.
Well, we have some wild ginger.
Wild ginger?
Yes. Smiling, Ernest hands her a bowl. Elizabeth eyes the contents curiously, then shoots her son a hopeful smile before tossing some ginger into the pot.
And salt? Oh, yes, salt, of course, Mother.
She holds a calabash container upside down over the stew.
And, sugar.
Sugar? Oh, do you think so in fish?
Yes, I love sugar in everything.
She stops the salt flow.
Oh, well, perhaps. We'll put in some wild honey.
He hands her a bowl and takes the salt container back. With a long wooden spoon, Elizabeth digs into the bowl, and all of the honey plops into the pot. She peers in, smiling, then stirs the mixture. She returns the empty bowl.
Now, you stir it while I go and get the plate.
Oh. Ernest takes the spoon from her and stirs the steaming stew. Elizabeth glances at the pot over his shoulder, then heads off. Scooping a spoonful of stew, Ernest raises it nearly to his lips, then halts. He spots Francis feeding a goat nearby. Grinning, Ernest moves toward his baby brother and kneels before him.
Here, Francis, taste this.
Francis takes the spoon and sips, then sticks his tongue out.
Ah!
The toddler spits with a disgusted expression, then wipes his mouth with his sleeve. He throws the spoon away, and it lands in front of a donkey. The donkey picks up the spoon with its mouth, then spits it out and runs off. At night in the burrow, dressed formally, the three older boys and their parents bow their heads at a dinner table.
For what we are about to receive, may we be truly thankful. Amen.
Amen.
Fritz and Jack share a smile. William removes the lid of a serving dish. Francis sleeps beside a goat with a blanket tucked around them both. William finishes serving and replaces the lid. Elizabeth watches with her mouth agape as William picks up his spoon and eagerly takes a sip of the stew. His brow furrows and he blinks several times before beaming at his wife. Fritz tries the stew. His smile drops and a deadpan expression settles on his face. Ernest grimaces, then flashes his mother a bright smile. Jack's eyes widen as he tastes the stew. Recovering, he nods encouragingly at his mother, who eyes her family with a furrowed brow.
Is it as bad as that?
Not at all, my dear. That's a splendid, full flavor.
Jack raises his eyebrows at his father. Elizabeth tastes the stew. Lowering her spoon slowly, she stares at it with a dismayed expression. William watches her attentively. She leaves. William follows, pointing at the boys.
Go right ahead. My dear. Darling, don't be upset. None of us very expert yet. I made a very bad raft, and the boys are all fingers and thumbs, but don't let's worry. Learning to do things will be a great adventure.
She dabs her nose with a handkerchief.
I hope so.
She turns away, her eyes glistening as she leaves his side. He watches her go with a concerned expression. On a sunny day, Jack guides a harnessed cow and donkey pulling logs.
Are you both going to stop together this time, whether you like it or not? Now stop.
Whoa.
They halt near Fritz.
Ah, that's handling them.
Drop your load over there and unhitch. We've got to get this thing up.
As Jack works on the ropes tethered to the donkey, the animal sits down. Fritz watches from beside a broken section of the ship's stern.
Come on now. This is no time to sit down. Get up. Well, now, this is ridiculous. Come on.
He pulls on the bridle.
Oh, come on now. Get up. This is being foolish. Come on now. Get up, you silly idiot. Well, then, gee, or haw.
He shrugs defeatedly.
Odd's petticoats, what language do you understand?
He grabs a stick and waves it.
Now get up, you silly ass.
The donkey rises. Jack nods, smirking, and drops the stick.
Make way for the flying swan.
Ernest rides the ostrich over.
Whoa, Henry, whoa, that's a boy.
He dismounts.
Hello, slowpokes. Well, we'd better get to work.
He unties a log from Henry's harness. Now Fritz aims a bow and arrow at a tree branch. With a thin rope tied to its end, the arrow arches over the branch, leaving the rope slung over it. William and Ernest run a thick rope through a pulley. The thin rope pulls the thicker rope and the attached pulley up to the branch. Later, William secures several ropes to the broken piece of the ship's stern, then waves at Fritz, who drives two harnessed donkeys forward, causing the stern to lift into the air. William and his sons chop thin trunks and branches, then arrange them side by side to form the foundations of a house. Long leaves make up a thatched roof. They saw planks of wood from logs and arrange them on a frame before fastening them with thick wooden pegs. Hands fasten a hinge on a small door. They tie thin logs together with rope and create a net-like pattern on the back of a homemade chair. A hand pours hot liquid into short, hollow bamboo stick molds. Later, one of the sticks is cut open and a candle taken out from within. Jack and Fritz hammer into the ground a handmade wooden mailbox reading William Robinson, Falcon's Nest, second floor. William, Elizabeth, and Francis beam at them. William and Elizabeth gaze at their new multi-level treehouse, nestled in and around one of the massive trees of the jungle. The first level of the treehouse features a room with a simple leaf roof, glassless windows, and a small patio. Higher up, the stern of the ship crowns the homestead, featuring its original decorative rim of swirling lines and curved wood, framing a row of windows. Ernest's diary shows a stick figure sketch of a person pulling a tethered animal along. Words below read, "We have all worked hard these last months. Now we are going to celebrate." At night, in formal attire, the family eats around the dinner table. Candles illuminate their cheerful faces. William blows a kiss to his youngest son, who grins back. Elizabeth smiles. Ernest leans toward the toddler.
"Can't you say thank you, Mother, for cooking a very nice dinner?"
"Ah,
is he never going to speak, sir?"
"Mm-hmm. One day when he finds something worth saying."
"Mmm."
Francis smiles with his mouth full.
"Then he won't be a chatterbox like you."
Ernest wears a downcast expression. At the head of the table, William adjusts his suit jacket.
"These clothes never wear comfortable."
He eyes Jack.
"I always wonder how you manage to relax in them."
"Mr. Brummel said it was a gift, sir. You practically have to pour yourself into them."
He stares off pensively.
"You know, I would have gone far as a gentleman of fashion."
William eyes him warily. Elizabeth wears a faraway expression.
"We've all gone far from those days."
William offers a sympathetic smile. Elizabeth shrugs.
"I'm sorry. It's the way we're dressed tonight."
"I think Fritz might smoke his first pipe tonight. With your permission, darling. In honor of his new beard."
"Thank you, sir."
Fritz takes a pipe from William.
"I find my heart very full tonight. Here we are, all safe together. Really, we can live a splendid life here. I see fields of grain and our flocks increasing."
"Our flocks will, sir, but what about us?" "Hmm.
Well, you've plenty of time to think of marriage, lad. Your beard hasn't grown at all yet, and his is hardly noticeable."
"Fisticuffs, I take wine with you. May every bristle grow long and curly."
He drinks from a cup.
"My lords and ladies,
A toast.
As Jack lifts his cup in the air, his jacket rips at the armpit.
The king. God bless him.
The king.
They all rise except for Francis and drink from their cups.
For the queen of our island.
The boys rise again.
God bless her.
Raising their cups to Elizabeth, they drink. Francis lifts his cup to his mouth as well.
Thank you, my dears.
May we have some music, Elizabeth? Something gay and jolly?
He offers a hand. Later, she plays the spinet.
Coyly the lady blushes, sighs and turns her head. Merrily ring the bells to lovers suit.
Wearing a bewildered expression, Elizabeth looks to William, then opens the spinet lid. She finds the brocade stuffed inside and pulls it out.
Mother's New Year's dress.
Holding the cloth close to her chest, she gazes off somberly. As William, Fritz, and Jack exchange worried looks, a tear rolls down Elizabeth's cheek. Ernest rushes to her side.
Don't cry, Mother. A ship will come. Someday.
With tears in her eyes, she leans her head against him. Now, William, Fritz, and Jack approach the treehouse in ragged clothing. Elizabeth descends stairs, joining them.
Well, my dear.
Jack sits on a tree stump.
A gentleman of fashion.
This is my last pair, except my evening trousers.
I'm in the same state.
Seems a pity to sacrifice our dress clothes.
They must be kept for the day that we're rescued.
Rescued? So far, our signal fires attracted only moths.
Well, the island will have to clothe as well as feed us.
There are plenty of antelope on the island, sir.
When I see my boys in animal skins, then I shall know that they're savages.
Fisticuffs, my good man. Tomorrow you will go out and shoot me a pair of, breeches.
An entry in Ernest's diary reads, "None of us dares leave camp while Fisticuffs hunts for our buckskin clothes. Yesterday, he mistook father for an antelope. I don't think Fritz would have made such a good soldier." In the jungle, Fritz fires his gun, grinning. Now, hands lay out an animal's hide, then scrape the fur with a shell. They wring water out of the sopping wet mass, then smooth out the dry, hairless hide with a stone. Now, using a pair of pants as a guide, they cut the hide, then make thin strips of the material. They sew the animal's skin with the thin strips. Fritz raises a hand as Jack adjusts a buckskin vest on him. Later, the two of them lay down an animal trap together. William approaches Elizabeth preparing food nearby. He takes a taste from a bowl and gives an approving nod. She smiles.
Here you go.
Fritz tosses a barrel into the trap's net.
Ah, what?
What?
The net lifts into the air.
Look at your sons.
Your sons, William. They're growing more like you every day.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you.
Oh, William. My sons were growing up to make great places for themselves in the world.
Elizabeth, darling, we're much better off in this new world than we could ever have been in that turbulent one we left. You know, I doubt that there's a family living anywhere today that wouldn't gladly change places with us. You can be happy here if you'll try. Will you try?
She gives a weak smile.
I am trying.
Look, Henry's laid an egg. Come quickly.
William.
Come on. Come quickly, Father.
They rush to the ostrich.
No.
Henry stands, revealing another egg.
Oh, he's done it again.
Now William shears a sheep, while Elizabeth holds a calabash over Francis's head like an upturned bowl and trims his hair. A goat nudges the toddler's belly. Fritz approaches Ernest.
You almost ready?
Yes, I just
get this. Ernest packs a satchel. Looking up, he notices smoke floating out of a window at the ship's stern.
Look, the house is on fire.
The brothers race up the treehouse steps, passing their dog coming down. At the stern, Fritz pushes aside a curtain to find Jack casually smoking a pipe.
Pipe, you young snake.
Look here, you won't give me away.
You'll wash tonight's dishes, then.
And clean the pigsty.
This is blackmail, you know.
You little milksop. You aren't old enough to smoke.
Here, have you noticed this?
He reveals a few chest hairs.
Well.
Fritz plucks them and hands them to Ernest.
Ouch!
Here, my lad. Press them in your diary.
Why, I'll show you.
Jack, Fritz, please, stop. Don't fight. Don't.
Jack glares at Fritz.
You think you're the only one that can grow up. You and your whiskers and your pipe.
Oh, Fritz was just trying to be funny. Weren't you, Fritz?
Of course I was. I thought Lady Bird had a sense of humor.
Jack eyes his bare chest in a mirror.
They're gone. All three of them.
His brothers approach.
I'm sorry, Lady Bird. I didn't know they meant so much to you.
Well, I hope the roots are still there, that's all.
Grabbing Fritz by the hair, Jack drags him outside. Grinning, Ernest follows, then pauses at the entrance and looks back. He grabs the pipe, sneaking a look outside. He puts it to his lips and breathes in deeply. Now, a view from the sea shows the island shadowed by clouds. On the island, raindrops snuff out a fire. Heavy rain pelts the treehouse. Inside, Ernest reads at the dinner table, while Elizabeth sews. Using a knife, Jack works on a handmaide doll.
Au clair de la lune, mon ami Pierrot, prête-moi ta plume.
A bored Fritz lifts a flute to his mouth.
Pour écrire un mot.
Now translated.
Francis wanders around.
By the light of the moon. Oh, Mother, what good will all this do?
Looking around with a forlorn expression, Ernest leaves the table. He approaches a window with a wooden grate and stares out at the relentless downpour.
Oh, this rain. It begins and stops the same time every day, doesn't it?
He turns toward his mother.
And then starts all over again.
She continues sewing. William enters, carrying a bowl of fruit. He shakes water off of his jacket.
Well, the rain's almost stopped.
We sit here day after day, preparing for another summer, another year. If only you'd build a boat, at least start one. Then we'd have something to look forward to hope for.
Jack and Fritz share a look as their father drops his gaze and fidgets with a pocket watch.
Darling, it would take a year to build a boat we could trust. And when it was built, who'd sail it?
You could do it, sir.
I'm only a landsman, lad.
We could learn to sail before we left the island, sir. And we have the ship's compass.
And what land would you set out for, Fritz?
What about that island we saw a week before we were wrecked, sir?
Captain's charts went down with the ship. How could I set a course?
He eyes them all questioningly, then returns his attention to the pocket watch. Elizabeth drops her head.
Then we go on like this.
William nods.
Till a ship comes.
The trap! I hope it's another wild boar!
Led by Fritz, the family rushes outside to find Francis trapped in the net, high in the air. They lower the net. William lifts the toddler out.
Oh, poor little fella's just frightened.
He might have been killed.
Elizabeth takes him from her husband and storms off. William stares after her. Halfway up the stairs, she shoots them a reproachful look.
Sorry, Father.
William wears a dismayed expression. In a bedroom in the treehouse, Elizabeth paces, clutching Francis to her chest. As William enters, she lays the toddler on the bed.
Elizabeth. Is it quite fair to blame me?
You are to blame.
Need you be so bitter about it?
How can I help it? When you've taken from me all the life I ever had.
All your life?
William, I loved you deeply once.
Once?
You were so gentle and understanding. But when we left Switzerland and came to England, you changed.
Elizabeth. Are you telling me your love for me is gone?
Well, what can you expect? Oh, William, you can't have wanted my love very much, or else you were stupid. You must have known what it would do to me to take me away from my home.
She sits. William's eyes glisten in the candlelight.
No, I didn't know. But that's no defense. I thought I'd find a better life for all of us here. I didn't know, or I'd never have come. Because, oh, I love my sons deeply. I've always loved you so much more.
Elizabeth blinks, and tears roll down her smooth cheeks. As she hangs her head, William stares off with his brow creased. Turning away, he moves slowly toward the exit. He parts the curtain and leaves the room. Outside, he descends the stairs slowly. He rubs his forehead. Fritz, Jack, and Ernest watch from the dining room as their father pauses and glances back up toward the bedroom before shaking his head and trudging off. Entering a makeshift tool shed, William leans against a log of wood on a workbench. He gazes out solemnly, his brow still creased in a distressed expression. His eyes shine with tears. He continues staring out, his gaze unblinking. He bows his head.
Expect it's the boat again. Father's probably refused to build it.
Fritz's brothers look at him.
We ought to talk to him. Seriously. Make a stand.
Uh-huh.
You do it, Jack. You're better at words.
Oh, no. No, you. You're the eldest.
Fritz looks from Jack to Ernest, then moves toward the shed. His brothers follow. As the boys approach, William lifts his head and looks at them.
We thought that...
Fritz fidgets with his flute.
We ought to speak to you, sir.
He looks to Jack.
Yes?
Jack eyes Ernest.
You, Dan.
No. I'm not going to tell him about the boat.
Wearing a wounded expression, William squints at his sons, then steps away. The boys look on from the shed. Pausing, William sees Elizabeth tending to the signal fire on the cliff. She straightens and looks toward the coastline. Lowering his gaze, William gestures to a log at his feet.
This timber will make a good keel.
Jack and Fritz share a look, while William stares forward defeatedly. Now, Ernest holds a log, steadying the wood frame of a new boat as William hammers a plank across the top. Fritz works with an axe nearby. He waves to his mother as a couple of donkeys arrive, dragging a pile of logs with Elizabeth standing on them.
Over the hills and far away, there sounds a beat of drum.
She unloads the logs. William sets a curved piece of the boat's frame, then hammers it into place.
Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, see here the soldiers come. The sabers are flashing in the sun and silver trumpets blow.
It's nice to hear Mother singing again, isn't it?
William glances toward her.
Yes.
She used to be so gay at home.
Well?
He eyes a single peg in a bowl.
She'll be gay again. When the boat's done and she can leave the island.
Ernest's smile fades. William hops down from the platform holding the boat and moves off with the bowl. Nearby, Fritz tosses a log. In the tool shed, William removes an item from a fire with long tongs and drops it in the bowl. Crouching, he looks at the sky through the entrance. Above, puffy clouds move at a quick pace. He returns to the fire. A streak of lightning flashes in the sky. William takes another look. Darker clouds roll in. Fritz and Jack look up, their hair and clothes blowing in the wind. Another bolt of lightning flashes against the dark clouds. Elizabeth shudders. A heavy rain starts. Elizabeth scoops Frances into her arms and rushes to the treehouse, followed closely by Ernest. The farm animals run for shelter. William and his two older sons move tools to the shed. Elizabeth comforts a sobbing Frances. Fritz and Jack run to the treehouse along with the dogs. Elizabeth rocks Frances in her arms as her other sons attempt to shut the blinds. Outside, a goat runs over a goose. Fritz moves Ernest away from a window and adjusts the blinds. As William races toward the house, lightning strikes above, illuminating the structure. William takes one last look at his surroundings before joining the family inside. He pulls back the blinds and looks out a window. Another bolt of lightning flashes in the clouds, and he backs away. Fritz looks out, his hair blowing in the wind. Lightning strikes a large tree nearby, slicing through the trunk. The top half falls, and Fritz pulls back from the window. A wide-eyed William stares frantically at his family as he holds the blinds down. Ernest hugs Elizabeth and Frances. The louvered shadow of the blinds falls on them. Looking out a window, William sees lightning hitting one of the massive trees nearby. It fells another large tree. Moving away from the window, William wrenches the door open, places an arm around his wife and youngest son, and leads them outside. Fritz and Jack follow. Ernest lingers, rummaging through books on a desk. Outside, leaves blow in the wind as the family minus Ernest hastily moves through sheets of pouring rain. They take cover against a massive tree nearby. They see Ernest rushing down the steps carrying a book. He falls at the base of the stairs. A bolt of lightning strikes the top of the tree above their home, splitting the trunk in half lengthwise. William flings his arms out, holding his family back as they watch the house collapse. Running over to Ernest, William removes a fallen branch off of him, then helps him up. The boy runs off. William hangs back, watching as lightning strikes another tree. A thick branch falls. It lands on the new boat, reducing it to smithereens. Gaping, William takes a few steps toward it. A flash of lightning illuminates his distraught expression. As the rain pummels his face and wind whips his hair, a small smile appears on his lips. He rejoins the family.
Oh, it's like a god sent! Now see what your beautiful island has done to us! We might all of us have been
kissed! I'm glad of what's happened, do you understand? I'm glad of it! I dare to believe it was God's will that we were cast away in this island! I believe my sons would grow to be men here! But I listened to you, and for a little while you were too strong for me! You persuaded me to build that boat! Now do you see what's happened? God's lightning has destroyed it! Well, I was right! I'll never be tempted to weaken again!
Now, sunlight brightens the sky and illuminates a calm sea below. A view of the island from the sea shows puffy clouds drifting over it. In the tool shed, Fritz pulls a blanket tight around his mother and youngest brother. Along with Jack and Ernest, he sees his father approaching. The patriarch surveys his surroundings, including their damaged home, then enters the shed.
Well, we start all over again, lads, with less than we had before. Perhaps we had too much in the beginning and our trial wasn't great enough. The Lord's good to us. We have a male and a female out of each flock. They'll increase and multiply and we'll build again.
Elizabeth looks down.
You ready to go to work?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
William smiles and nods at the boys, then leaves. The three brothers regard their downcast mother, then exchange a look. Now, hands reinforce the spinet and various pieces of furniture, including a chair leg and a headboard, with bamboo and string. They wrap string around an ornate candelabra. They fit a wheel on an overturned piece of furniture. They adhere several similarly shaped shells to a wall in neat rows. They place candles into a simple handmade holder made from pieces of logs tied together. Hands hang a broken mirror on a wall and the painting of Jesus and his disciples on another. On a riverbank, dressed in buckskin clothing, Jack and Fritz build a canoe, hollowing out the inside of a log. Elsewhere, a view from above shows water flowing down a slanted gutter system and pooling in a large turtle shell basin. A young ostrich drinks from the basin. Hands lay a row of shells on the ground beside a trio of baby goats, creating a border. A wide view shows a decorative shell-lined pathway leading to a new house nestled between massive trees. William pushes a wheelbarrow up the path. Walking down the path, Fritz and Jack stop at a water tank decorated with shells. Fritz unplugs a spout, and Jack holds a bowl under it as water spews out. He peers inside the house.
Look at Mother.
Dressed in simple clothing with her sleeves rolled up, Elizabeth works a spinning wheel.
And I once thought that a woman had to be idle in order to be beautiful.
Fritz eyes his brother.
Lady Angela, for instance?
Lady Angela? Name sounds vaguely familiar.
Jack takes a swig of the water, then hands the bowl to his brother.
Lady Angela. Lady. You know, I...
Fritz spills water on Jack, then runs.
Why, you...
Meanwhile...
That's a beauty, Francis. I must catch it before I leave my collection.
Wielding a net, Ernest chases a butterfly.
Well, come along, Francis. We can catch it now.
He charges into a hollow with Francis in tow. Hundreds of large spider webs cover the space from top to bottom. Ernest rips apart several of them as he follows the butterfly. He swings the net at the butterfly, but misses. He swings and misses again. The insect gets caught in one of the giant webs. Ernest grins. Throwing the net aside, he carefully begins tearing the web around the butterfly. Francis's eyes widen. A large spider descends quickly toward Ernest. Francis tugs on his brother's clothing and points frantically.
Don't, Francis. I must be very careful not to hurt his wings. Stop it, Francis. I must get this one. This one is so lovely. I must have it.
The spider lands on Ernest's neck. Ernest grabs it and flings it off himself, then picks up a stick and strikes the insect several times. He rubs his neck.
That hurt.
He turns to the web with the butterfly trapped in it. His view of the insect blurs, then goes in and out of focus. Wearing a confused expression, Ernest touches his head, then rubs his neck as he turns away. His vision blurs again, the webs around him blurring into indistinct masses. Ernest frowns and looks in another direction. His vision spins. Francis kneels beside his now fallen brother, grimacing. Ernest tries to push himself up. He looks around weakly, then lies down and passes out. The toddler regards his unconscious brother. He places his tiny hand on Ernest's cheek.
I.
He leans closer.
Oh.
He sits upright. At the riverbank, Elizabeth washes a garment as a flock of geese swims over. Fritz swims a few feet away. In the hollow, Francis shakes Ernest. As Elizabeth continues scrubbing the garment, Francis emerges from the hollow. He breaks into a run. In the river, Fritz surfaces, then continues swimming. Running down a small slope, Francis falls backward. He gets up and continues moving, running along a path bridging a narrow section of the river. Nearby, Elizabeth shakes out the garment, a buckskin vest, and hangs it on a T-shaped wooden stake. Running along the riverbank, Francis stumbles. He straightens and forges ahead. As Elizabeth checks on other garments drying on posts, Francis crosses a wooden bridge. William and Jack arrive at the laundry area. Jack kneels by the river while William approaches Elizabeth.
Oh, expert you've become, my dear. Buckskin isn't easy to wash.
She regards her hand, and William takes both in his.
Oh, they're still soft and beautiful.
He kisses them. Francis tugs at his leg.
Dad! Oh, what is it, son?
William, he's trying to tell us something.
I believe he is. What is it, son? Tell Father.
The toddler rushes off, then returns to his parents.
Francis, tell us what it is.
He runs off and comes back again.
What is it? What is it, lad? What is it?
He tugs at his father's hand, then races off. William, Elizabeth, and Jack chase after him. Fritz scrambles out of the river and follows. Francis leads William and Jack to the hollow's entrance. Rushing in, the two spot Ernest lying on the ground. William runs over and lifts his unconscious son to a seated position, outside. Francis beckons Elizabeth and Fritz over, then follows them into the hollow.
What happened to him?
He's been bitten. Give me a knife, quickly.
Jack obeys. As William positions the tip of the blade over Ernest's neck, Jack grimaces and Elizabeth shields her face with her hands. Fritz stares anxiously. Standing beside him, Francis turns his head away. William puts his mouth to the wound, then spits to the side.
Get some hot water ready.
Fritz picks up Francis and runs out. Jack and Elizabeth brace William as he lifts Ernest into his arms and carries him out. Later, Ernest rests in a bedroom. An anxious William stands by the bed while a seated Elizabeth caresses her son's face. The boy stirs weakly, but his eyes remain closed. In the kitchen, Jack sits at the dinner table while Fritz paces behind him.
He was always such a good little fella.
In the bedroom, Elizabeth eyes William.
Fever's still high.
The patriarch wears a crestfallen expression as he nears the bed.
I was too late to draw all the poison.
Elizabeth puts a hand on her son's neck and gives her husband a small nod.
I'll get another.
William exits the room. He heads downstairs into the kitchen.
How is he, Father?
More hot water. He needs another poultice.
Fritz goes to a kettle. William's hand shakes as he lifts a spoonful of powder.
Let me, Father.
Jack takes the spoon from him and scoops the powder into a bowl. As Fritz adds steaming water, William puts his fist to his forehead. He lowers it with a troubled look.
He could never have been struck down like this in England.
Accidents can happen anywhere, sir.
But I brought you here.
Here, Father.
He takes a fresh bandage from Jack and leaves the kitchen. The boys watch him ascend the staircase to the bedroom.
I can't bear to see him so broken.
Jack sits.
I wish we'd been more decent.
I never knew how much I loved him till this happened.
In the bedroom, William watches as Elizabeth wraps the fresh bandage around the back of Ernest's neck. Both parents look on with anxious expressions as their son shifts uneasily, his eyes still closed. Ernest moves a hand to his face, but Elizabeth gently pulls it away. She shoots William an alarmed look.
His pulse is getting weaker.
The crisis is here, I think.
He steps away. Elizabeth adjusts the blanket on her son and holds the bandage against his neck. William moves to the other side of the bed. As Ernest writhes in his sleep, Elizabeth glances at her husband, who stands helplessly by the bed, and looks down at his son with tears in his eyes. William takes a few steps toward a window, then wrings his hands as he gazes back at his son, squirming in distress. The patriarch averts his eyes, then glances back momentarily before moving to a window and placing his hands on the sill. He looks at the destroyed boat on the ground below. Half covered by foliage, birds rest on the broken frame. With tears streaking his face, he turns his head and looks toward the cliff where the altar cloth flag flutters high in the night sky beside the signal fire. William looks over his shoulder at his son. The boy's head shifts restlessly on his pillow. Facing the window again, the patriarch looks skyward.
Father, how have I sinned?
He lowers his head with an anguished expression. Now, a bird's eye view shows the Robinsons' home in the jungle with a light shining in a window. In the distance, the signal fire burns at the coast near the raised flag. Dawn breaks, with rays of sunlight streaming through the jungle. In the bedroom, William and Elizabeth watch a sleeping Ernest lying still in bed. In the kitchen, Fritz sits at the table while Jack paces. Upstairs, Ernest's head moves slightly on his pillow and his brow pinches. His parents watch attentively. The boy's eyes open slowly. Blinking, he turns his head toward his parents and meets their gaze. He offers a weak smile. His parents smile back.
Darling.
Ernest's eyes close again, his smile fading as his head lolls to the side. William reaches out and touches his son's forehead, then withdraws his hand. Elizabeth does the same. Her face crumples. She bows her head, and William puts an arm around her. In the kitchen, Fritz and Jack exchange an alarmed look, then rush upstairs. They stand in the bedroom's doorway. William faces his elder sons with a grim expression.
The fever's broken. He'll live.
A small smile touches his lips. Now, at the riverbank, Jack kneels beside the moored canoe, sorting through a pile of shellfish, brushing a hand through his hair. Fritz joins him. He tosses one into the water. Behind them, trees frame a narrow inlet with a view of the sea. A ship sails into view. As Fritz looks toward his brother, he spots the ship in the distance. His eyes widen.
Jack, look! Look, Jack! A ship! Look at the 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 ship!
Jack runs.
No, come back! Come back! We gotta tell him to stop!
He gets in the canoe.
Oh, hurry, Jack! Hurry!
Jack pushes it into the water, then hops in.
Paddle, Jack! Paddle!
The brothers paddle through the bay toward the inlet to the sea. A view through a couple of trees shows the ship in the distance. A little later, the brothers paddle on the sea's waves. Later still, they board the ship, grinning at the well-dressed passengers on the vessel. The passengers, in turn, give the buckskin-wearing boys curious once-overs. Back on the island, outside the homestead, a flock of geese runs along the shell-lined pathway as Francis chases them with a stick.
Yo!
Sitting with the dogs on the porch, William laughs at his youngest son. Meanwhile, Fritz and Jack run along the riverbank. They cross the two bridges. Elizabeth approaches the house with Ernest, carrying a bouquet of flowers. Fritz and Jack run over.
A ship in Deliverance Bay.
Elizabeth runs off.
William! A ship, come, Father.
They were blown off their course. Aren't we lucky, sir? Napoleon's been defeated, sir. Europe's at peace now.
William gazes off with a furrowed brow.
Well, it'll be a better world to live in.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth rushes to the signal fire and views the ship from the coast. She clasps her hands together excitedly. Wearing a bright smile, she hurries back. At the house, William wears a downcast expression. Elizabeth approaches.
William! William, we're saved!
He offers a small smile.
Well, it had to come. I always knew it would come one day.
Seems a pity to leave all this.
Father, must we go?
Well, you lads are men now. There are marriages to be thought of and careers. Your mother and I have always expected great things of you. Well, now you're ready to accomplish them.
he turns to Elizabeth.
As for your mother, she's far more lovely than when we were cast away. The drawing rooms of London will again be at her feet.
William, are you telling us that you're going to stay?
Yes.
I want to stay too, sir. I can, can't I?
You want me to go?
Hasn't that always been your wish?
Elizabeth's gaze drifts over her two older sons. With a glance at William, she steps away. Her sons watch as she walks inside the house. William keeps his back turned to her. Glancing at his sons, he turns toward the house. Inside, Elizabeth rests her hands on the spinet. William approaches, pausing a couple of steps behind her.
You'll want to take the spinet with you?
You can be so brave about letting me go.
She faces him.
Brave?
A look of realization washes over his face.
Elizabeth.
You thought I could bear to leave you.
She holds him close.
All my life is with you.
My darling.
He hugs her. Later, Fritz and Jack don formal clothes.
I hate to think of wearing clothes like these again. Yeah, they're uncomfortable after the buckskins.
Later still.
And try not to grieve, lads. Of course, it's only right that you should go.
But it means the breaking up of the family. And we've been so close.
I know, but that's the way of families, lad. Someday you'll come back with your wives and children and visit us.
Will a wife come for me and one for Francis someday?
Yes. Now that the island's been discovered, other colonists will come. Better hurry.
Fritz hugs his mother and Francis.
Mother.
Jack takes his turn.
Jack.
Fritz shakes William's hand. Jack also shakes hands with William. The two brothers share a look, then lunge toward their father and envelop him in an embrace. The patriarch holds them close. As they pull away, William smiles at each of them, then pats Jack on the back. Fritz moves toward Ernest for a hug, but the boy offers his hand instead. Fritz shakes it.
Goodbye, Ernest.
The brothers share a smile. Ernest shakes Jack's hand as well. Later, on board the ship, Fritz and Jack wear bittersweet smiles as they wave at their family. William, Elizabeth, Ernest, and Francis wave back from the coast.
Done your work well, William. They'll never forget.
They watch the ship moving off. A view of the family waving heartily rises to show the altar cloth flag fluttering above them. Fade to black. On a background of geometric shapes, words in a swirling cursive font read, "The End." To black. This film has been described by Deluxe, with funding by Walt Disney Studios, voice by Jedediah Barton.